What's the meaning of life?
I think the meaning is to be found in that. And as you put things together, and as you take responsibility for things, that meaning emerges from that. And so it emerges from that the same way it emerges from a symphony, in some sense, you know, because a symphony is composed of layers of patterns and they're all working harmoniously together. And they speak directly to people of meaning, which is why people love music so much. I mean, every form of music does that. And that it's a model for proper being, which is the placing of all the different levels of reality into harmonious relationship with one another. And meaning emerges out of that naturally. And meaning is actually an instinct. This is another thing that people don't understand, and it's a case I've been able to make because I know a fair bit about how the brain works. The twin hemispheres of your brain interact to guide you through life, which is a truism in some sense. You use your brain to guide you through life, but your brain does that fundamentally by instilling the proper things that you do with a sense of meaning. And that meaning is, it's not something that's just a surface. It's not on the surface of the world in some sense. It's the deepest instinct that you have. It's associated with a phenomenon that Russian neuropsychologists discovered back in the 1960s called the orienting reflex. And the orienting reflex is what orients you towards things of interest.
Right.
And that happens unconsciously. And so if something happens around you that's of significance, often something you don't expect, say something somewhat chaotic, you'll orient towards it and that attracts your attention. And then as you investigate what that is, that's associated with a sense of meaning. And if you put what you're investigating into proper order, then that meaning continues to reveal itself. So you can use meaning as a guide to proper being. But you have to also be very careful to conduct yourself honestly if you're going to do that, because if you conduct yourself dishonestly, then you pathologize the mechanisms that orient you. Everybody is a strange mixture of victim and victimizer. Lots of terrible things happen to people that aren't justifiable in some sense. You know, well, illness strikes people randomly. Yeah. I mean, not entirely randomly, obviously, but there's a large random element in it. Where you're thrown into existence as a consequence of your birth, that you're sort of thrown into reality with your particular set of predispositions and weaknesses. And then there's going to be times in your life where things twist in a manner that's unfair to you, that you're not getting your just deserts. But that goes along with all sorts of unequally distributed privileges as well. And so that's the arbitrary nature of existence. But you can't allow those sorts of things to define you, because it's not that useful strategically. When you're playing a card game, you're dealt a hand of cards.
Yep.
Well, what do? You play the hand the best you can. Why? Because all the hands are equal? No. Because you don't have a better strategy than playing the hand that you're dealt the best you can. And that doesn't even mean it'll be a winning strategy. But because people don't always win, sometimes we lose, and sometimes we lose painfully, and sometimes we lose painfully and unjustly. Mm-hmm. That's not the point. The point is you don't have a better strategy, and neither does anyone else. And then it's also not so obvious how privilege and victimization are distributed. You know, if you take someone who's doing quite well in life, and you scratch underneath the surface, you generally don't have to scratch very far until you find one or more profound tragedies of the past or perhaps of the present. Now, no matter how well protected you are in the world, you're still subject to illness, you're still subject to aging, you're still subject to the dissolution of your relationships, the death of your dreams, death itself. So vulnerability is built into the structure of existence. Now, if you start to regard yourself as a hapless victim, or even worse, an unfairly victimized victim, well, then things go very badly sideways for you. It's not a good strategy. You end up resentful. You end up angry. You end up vengeful. You end up hostile. And that's just the beginning. Things can get far more out of hand than that. So strategically, it's a bad game. It's better to take responsibility for the hand that you've been dealt. You've got no better protection in life than doing that. We've had a long conversation in our culture about the necessity for self-esteem and happiness, and that's not what I'm talking about. I tell my audiences and my readers very straightforwardly that life is difficult and that there's a lot of suffering in it, and that you have to learn how to conduct yourself in the face of that. The problem with the pursuit of happiness is that when life's storms come along, happiness disappears, and then you're left with nothing. And so you need to pursue something that's deeper than happiness. And if happiness comes along, well then, hooray for you. You don't want to despise it because it's fleeting, but it's much better to pursue things that are meaningful than things that make you happy. It's deeper, and it orients you more appropriately, and it keeps you centered in your own life. It makes you more useful for your family and your community. So that's one thing. And it's a relief to young people to know that the baseline conditions of life are difficult, but that you can still prevail. So it's a funny message in some sense, or a strange message, because on the one hand, it's somewhat pessimistic. Now, I talk about suffering and malevolence also, but I also emphasize the fact that despite that being the base conditions of existence, people are tough enough to prevail. So that's one element of it. The other element is the necessity of responsibility. So a lot of what people find in life that provides them with a sustaining meaning is a consequence of not the pursuit of rights or the pursuit of happiness or the development of self-esteem, but the adoption of responsibility. And the more responsibility, in some sense, the better. Responsibility for yourself, for making sure that your life lays itself out like it should. Responsibility for your family, responsibility for the community. It's people who take responsibility that are the ones that you admire. And that's the right pathway through life. That's where meaning is to be found. Even though life is suffering, if you're sufficiently courageous and forthright and honest, let's say, in your approach, and you don't shy away, what you'll find is that there's something within you that will respond to the challenge of suffering with the development of ability that will transcend the suffering. So the pessimism is, yeah, well, life is rife with problems at every level. But the upside is, if you turn and confront that voluntarily, that you'll find something in yourself that can develop and master that. And so the optimism is nested in the pessimism. And that's extremely helpful to people, especially people who are struggling, because they think, oh my God, life is so difficult. I don't know if I can stand this. There must be something wrong with me. Does anybody else feel this way? And you can say, yes, everyone feels that way at some time. But that's, and it is as bad as you think, but you're more than you think you are. You're more than you think you are. The goal in life is to conduct yourself so that life improves, at least so that undue suffering is forestalled. But more than that, so it's to constrain malevolence and suffering to the degree that that's possible. But then also to work for a positive improvement in things at every level. And that's how you should orient yourself. One of the things about what I do is that I'm always trying to take high-level abstract truths, you know, fundamental truths, and to make them concrete and practical so that you can implement them in your day-to-day life. Because it's the connection between those abstractions and practical action that really cements their meaning and makes them comprehensible. And this idea of incremental improvement is a great one. You know, if there are things about your life that are bothering you, or things about the world that are bothering you, then you want to decompose them into solvable sub-problems. And you do this, if you have a child, this is the sort of thing that you do naturally, right? Because you want to set your child a challenge that's sufficiently challenging to push them forward in their development. So that makes it meaningful for the child. That puts them in the zone of proximal development, which is where proper maturation takes place. They'll find that intrinsically meaningful. You want to make it challenging, but also with a reasonable probability of success. And there's an art to that. So you want to set yourself a task that's difficult, but not so difficult you can't attain it. And then what happens is that you step up improvement across time, incrementally. And there's also a certain element of humility to it, right? Which is, don't bite off more than you can chew, right? Don't set grandiose goals, but incremental improvement will get you a tremendous distance. What you do as a clinician, as a clinical psychologist, as a psychiatrist, is if people are afraid of something that's standing in their way as an obstacle, like maybe you're trying to develop your career and you're afraid of public speaking. Mm-hmm. Well, I could try to calm you down about your fear and protect you from the challenge that would be associated with public speaking. You say, well, you never have to do that. Or I could say, no, look, you have to learn to present yourself more effectively in public if you're going to develop your career. and you're afraid of it. So let's break down what you're afraid of into 10 steps or 20 steps until we can find a step that's small enough so that you can actually master it. And let's assume that with 3 years of diligent practice that you could become a competent public speaker, at least one that isn't terrified, and with 5 years you could become an expert. And let's decide how relevant that is to your future prosperity and thriving. And then let's assume that if you break it down properly and take it on step by step in this incremental way that we discussed, that you'll actually master every single bit of it. And the thing that's cool about that is all the clinical evidence shows it works. And not only that, that's actually how you learn in life.